And you're with Annie and Tobias on Solidarity Breakfast, and we've got Sue Bolton on the line. G'day, Sue. How are you?
Hi, how's it going?
Good. We're being very highbrow there for a minute, talking about why it's important to fight anti-imperialism. But you've decided as a long-term Marybeck councillor to fight imperialism by putting your hat in the ring for the Victorian election.
Yes, I have. I'll be standing in the seat of Broadmeadows at the end of this year. Broadmeadows covers the top part of the Marybeck Council, like the northern strip of suburbs, Faulkner, Hadfield, Glenroy, but then also includes the other side of the Western Ring Road, Broadmeadows, Campbellfield, Coolaroo, up to Somerton Road. Actually, a lot of people in Faulkner have been forced to because of the high cost of housing in Faulkner.
Oh, well, that's very interesting because, as you say, you one of the reasons for why it's so important for you to be doing this is because you believe that the Albanese Labor government has failed to address the interests of working people and that they need a radical left-wing alternative.
That's right. That's why I'm standing, and Socialist Alliance is standing in the area. We'll also have a number of candidates in Geelong and the Upper House in the northern suburbs, the northern metropolitan and the Cedar Pascoe. So we'll be standing in a few places. And I think, Labor, both federal and state, you know, we see time and time again how they're not the representative of working class people, really. So there absolutely needs to be a left alternative to this.
You're being quite strategic, aren't you? The Socialist Alliance is being quite strategic in the choices of seats that you're going for.
I think partly we have built up a lot of support in especially the two lower house seats that we're standing in Melbourne, and our Geelong branch has been very active in Geelong, like really. If there's anything progressive happening in Geelong, it's usually our comrades who've been at the heart of getting something going.
Yeah.
Sometimes things might be initiated by others and we'll come in and support them. But, going way back to the Work Choices campaign in 2005 and those massive protests, but also on all sorts of issues since then around queer rights and Palestine and, like, lots and lots of issues, yeah.
So tell me, what are the key issues for Broadmeadows?
I think for Broadmeadows, the eastern side of Broadmeadows, the upfield train line is a really massive issue. In fact, anyone who lives north of Bell Street on the upfield train line, you run the risk of cancellations at peak hour because there's only a single track north of Faulkner. And that means that trains can't pass each other. So as soon as there's 6 minutes late, they're cancelled, which one or two trains are cancelled at peak hour, then it means people late for work and risk losing their job. But also, for people who live north of Faulkner, there's no station apart from the station at the end, the upfield station. So there's nothing in between. There used to be a station at Campbellfield until the late 50s when they demolished it. And so there's real human beings who live and work in Campbellfield and the eastern side of Broadmeadows, Dulles area, et cetera. And there's no station they can get on at. There really should be two stations between the upfield station and Gary station in Faulkner. I think there's a lot of fear in the city of Broadmeadows, like there is everywhere, about people's ability to afford to live. And so I think, cost of living is a big issue for most people everywhere, but probably, you know, less in richer part of towns and of the town, and areas like Bed Meadows, you know, people are very much a victim to job cuts as well as low wages and the casualisation of work, and all of that plays into people not being able to afford housing, whether it's rental housing or buying a house. And then we've got the fact that the government is, state government is still trying to get away with demolishing the public housing towers. And while there's no public housing towers in Broadmeadows, like, the impact of that will flow on. And while there might be a lot of people who don't think about public housing because there's so little public housing nowadays in Victoria and across Australia, a lot of people don't have any experience of public housing, that public housing is something that governments can do. And so a lot of people don't necessarily see it as a solution because they've grown up in an environment where the only thing they've ever known is housing being organised through the market, access to housing being organised through the market, and the market's been disastrous.
Yeah, and yeah, so it's an engineered lack of housing for lower paid and lower income people.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think the housing issue is really, really big.
Yeah.
It's not necessary. I mean, we will absolutely be campaigning for building more public housing because that's the only way you can solve the issues. You can't solve housing through the market. But there's also an issue of having to raise awareness around that issue because a lot of people are not aware of...
That there's a way out.
Yeah, of this as being an answer.
Yeah, the other thing about those suburbs in particular, it strikes me a similar element to being, say, in the bush, where there's this idea that governments just don't know what it's like to live in these places. And so they make rules that have no positive effect for people in, say, the bush or even in Broadmeadows, even though Broadmeadows is actually part of Melbourne.
That's right. That's right. And
reason why I bring that up is because of the issue of things like wanting to put in incinerators, for example, or the chemical fires because they've built factories that are not being regulated properly, but they've put them out into the west or out towards Broadmeadows because they believe that they're out of sight, out of mind.
That's right. They believe people won't do anything about it. And the plans for a wallet incinerator will absolutely affect people in Broadmeadows if it goes ahead. And Sunbury, I'm not sure that it would, you know, that's part of the Hume Council, which Broadmeadows is part of the Hume Council. Sunbury is not part of the Broadmeadows electorate. But, you know, yeah, they're also, their community campaigns against the wallet and Sunbury proposals for incinerators, but also, like, the Hume Council is grappling with the issue. I think the applications are for outside of the Broadmeadows electorate, but in the northern, outer northern suburbs, for a data processing centre, which, of course, the data processing centres, as they're popping up around the world to, you know, fund, to power AI, are really running places out of water.
And also increasing the cost of electricity across the board.
Yeah. So, like, this
they're not our friend.
That's right. So this is an issue that Hume Council is having to deal with, and there's very little, as far as I can see, regulation of this issue in particular.
No, that's right. In fact, it's fascinating to me that, in fact, data centres are ringing Melbourne now, like, and even down in Port Melbourne, places like that, And there's very, very little discussion about it on legacy media, despite the fact that it's going to change people's lives. We're paying for our own subjugation.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, there will be a massive increase in the use of electricity, which you're right, that will flow into higher electricity bills. And then also the usage of water is incredible. And in a sense, they now, I don't know what sort of charges they pay for water, but I imagine governments will, you know, give them, you know, will, you know, capitalist governments, that's what we've got, will be, you know, rolling out the red carpet to these data processing centres.
Well, they've already done it.
And we've already seen them do it to gas companies, the bipartisan a bipartisan refusal to impose any sort of taxation. So we can probably pretty safely assume that these will go on to whatever AI mates and other other related industries, like the companies running the incinerators, will face the same little scrutiny that the gas companies do as well.
Waste to energy. That's their motto, isn't it? So this is why it's really important that you, as a socialist, put your hand up, isn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely is. And the other thing is that the Allan government, you know, there has been some campaigning against the state government over Palestine and supporting an MOU or being part of an MOU with the Israeli Defence Force and funding a project for Elbit Systems, one of the big weapons manufacturers in Israel. Now, the Elbit Systems project has been built now with government money, and so that project's no longer something being funded, and the MOU with the Israeli Defence Force has run out. So so they haven't renewed that. No doubt that is a result, a bit of a win in a sense for the Palestine movement. But what the government is doing, the Victorian government, separately to the federal government, is they are funding, pumping massive amounts of money into weapons manufacturers in Victoria, in particular around Geelong. And in fact, Geelong is being turned into a weapons manufacturing hub, including the old Ford factory in Geelong. So this is something which, you know, we are saying that the funding, the bankrolling of weapons manufacturing needs to be shifted out of weapons manufacturing and going to other uses, social uses.
Well, it's interesting you should bring this up, because what they've done, in fact, is over a decade or longer, the federal and state government and its bipartisan have locked Australian manufacturing into the war industry. They've created a suburb of America in actual terms, because it's unnecessary for us to be tied to defence manufacturing. They've decided to do it, basically. And they've impoverished areas like in policy, like Geelong and Broadmeadows and places like this. And of course, then they say there is jobs in defence manufacturing, despite the fact we don't, with the latest war, Israeli-US aggression, we're now told that there are a whole range of products that are required for construction, like polyurethane piping, for example. Like, we're going to run out of that, and you require it for plumbing, right? Now, they stop manufacturing that locally because we're part of the international world economy, although we could actually be manufacturing it here. So we could actually have a non-defense manufacturing industry in Australia, we don't need to be a suburb of America.
Well, that is absolutely true. It was a choice, and it was absolutely a choice. And I think it might have started under Scott Morrison government when he wanted Australia to be one of the top 10 weapons manufacturers in the world. So it was a deliberate policy. It might have started earlier than that, but
I mean, I don't think the Labor Party is adverse to doing this sort of bullshit as well.
That's right. Well, they've just followed on from that. And, you know, yeah, well, there are a lot of things that Australia could manufacture. And if there are certain things which are really important and there's no private company prepared to manufacture, then the government can also run manufacturing. They used to do government manufacturing for defence. And
they used to build public housing.
That's right. So the Australian government used to make defence uniforms and police uniforms and so forth. They used to have a government aircraft factory, ammunition factory, et cetera. Now, okay, those are all war-related, but what it proves is it is possible to, do manufacturing for civilian purposes that is run by the government.
Yeah, and the point being is that if a person of your political ilk actually, I mean, and going back to what you were saying about public housing being an alternative that people in the Broadmeadows electorate are unaware of, having people in Parliament who can actually articulate alternatives to these mainstream messages would be so good.
And vitally
important, because I think one of the strengths of your campaign, even I'm thinking of the last one you ran in the seat of Wills, was that not only do you speak about the big issues, and I'm just recalling the memory of it's been 1 year since Gaetano Greco passed this week, and I'm just thinking of what he would often say was that your political persuasion is almost irrelevant to normal people, and what people want to do is that they want to have the lights working, no holes in the road, and access to public transport. And I think that's one of the campaigns that you lead quite well, is that you can talk about these big industries like, you know, war-related spending in federal governments and the access to public transport, but also you're actually quite connected to workers at a ground level, you know, council workers that are standing up for their rights in the ASU campaign and many other issues like the environment, access to bike lanes. I've seen you at almost everything in the Marybeck area that supports a social cause.
Yeah, I think that is important to be able to defend people's rights regardless of which level of government or big business is involved in trampling over people's rights to a basic functioning society. And I think that is really important because people have so many things that piss them off in society, but people aren't necessarily in the space of being able to campaign around everything. I mean, some things might just affect them and not really anyone else, like some sort of injustice or, you know, something not working that makes life really difficult. But, you know, certainly where there is, there's something that affects, you know, a range of people, whether it is around, you know, an unsafe road or something else, I think the way I sort of do things is I try and bring people together who might be affected by that issue, and so that people are speaking with one voice. And I think that's really important. I mean, this sort of goes to what I do on the council, is I try and get people organised to be able to speak for themselves and not just speaking through me, but speaking on their own behalf. Certainly, I think, you know, even in you know, standing for a state seat, you know, my intention, especially if I got elected, but is to do something similar in the electorate, in state government and so forth, because, you know, we need people to see that they can there's a way that they can change things in society and not just speak through politicians. I think that is really, really important. And when people come together with a common interest, whether it is a workplace dispute like a strike or industrial action or whatever, or some other issue, then unless you're united, you're not going to win. And so in order to be united, it means that people have to overcome their different prejudices and so forth. And so that's probably the best way of overcoming prejudice and discrimination, when people come together collectively to fight for something. When we've got all of these forces, mainstream politicians, but also, you know, the far right that's busy trying to tell people that migrants are the cause of the housing crisis. And if that was true, we would have had dirt cheap housing during COVID.
That's exactly right.
And we didn't have dirt cheap housing. It was very expensive still.
Well, you know, it's always about misdirection. They're a magic act, aren't they, the rich? They're always directing people's eyes to some other direction other than them as the culprit.
That's right.
Well, good luck with your campaign, and we'll keep an eye on what you're doing, Sue. Thanks very much for talking to us this morning.
Thanks, Annie. Thanks. Bye.